Blog Talk Radio.
So we've been quarantined for a while, and people who say use this time productively don't have families. They say Shakespeare wrote King Lear while under quarantine. If Shakespeare had to cook and do laundry, Lear would have as much dialogue as Rambo. I'm Brett Singer. This is my show. Hello, hello, hello. Good morning. It is Friday, June 26th. The year is 2020. This is Brett from the Bunker. I am Brett Singer, and I am joined today by Christiana Jackson. Christiana, how are you?
Hey, I'm well. How are you? Good morning.
I'm pretty good, pretty good. So I ask everybody this. This has always been the first question because it's important. How are you holding up?
Oh, I'm doing better. This has been a good Well, this part of the week's been good, so I'm doing better. It's been a little intense, a little grim, of course.
Okay.
But yeah, I feel good. I feel pretty good.
Okay, that's good. That's good. That's very good. So now I know you've been quarantined. We've all been quarantined. What have you been doing to stay sane? Like, what have you been doing to keep yourself normal during all this?
Well. Actually, your quote is exactly accurate because I have only been productive. I'm solo quarantined. I live in Harlem. I've been in my apartment for 14 and a half years. It's rent stabilized. I call it my cheap coffin. So I do love my apartment, but the only way I've gotten through this is by staying productive and staying distracted. So if I had other people here, I would definitely get less done. But so I've just been cooking and cleaning a lot, like a husbandless housewife. That's been my mode for all, pretty much all of
husbandless housewife. I like that. That's very catchy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a catchy phrase.
It's also quite sad. It's like, so this is the problem, though. It's like, go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Finish.
No, I was just going to say, you know, when you cook like a really good meal and then have to eat it alone, it's kind of like, how am I not booed up? How do I not have a husband? I'm making Cornish hens for myself. It's
I don't know. Cornish hens is that's advanced cooking. That's not, you know, that's not just slapping a couple of turkey burgers on the grill. I mean, you know, you gotta work harder to get a Cornish hen right.
Yeah, I'm very bougie with my food. So that was one of the things I ran out. Like, when quarantine started, I was like, we got to have some Cornish hens, which I don't think that was on many people's shopping list.
Not mine. I'm more of a candy guy.
Yeah. I was like, got to buy some Cornish hens. Absolutely. Got to stock up on veggies. Got to stock up on fancy cheeses. Like, my quarantine, I think that's the thing. Like, I've realized in isolation – the person that I'm becoming is kind of bougie, a little strange, I've just been keeping myself very preoccupied. Right before this started, actually, I woke up, I folded my laundry, I've got another load ready, and then I'm making a limeade with grapefruit and mint. I mean, it's just cane sugar, all that kind
of
stuff.
Making your own limeade. That sounds yummy.
Yeah. I mean, that's like pretty low on the totem pole, but it's like, oh yeah, let's see what a limeade tastes like with a little bit of grapefruit juice. Why not, right?
Sure. What the hell? I mean, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I feel like in quarantine, the answer to should I try this is like, yeah, why not?
True. Very true. There's been a lot of that, I feel like, on my end. I'm like, yeah, why not? Start drinking. I've been making a lot of blood orange margaritas. That's the other thing.
Oh, that sounds really good.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Yeah. You get an actual blood. You get like actual blood oranges. You get the blood orange juice. How do you make that?
Okay. Well, this is what I learned the hard way. Blood oranges don't produce a lot of juice. So I bought them and I squeezed them and I was like, this ain't gonna cut it. So then I had to add regular orange juice and then I just bought blood orange juice that was already squeezed, and then I made a simple syrup with it, And then when I made, it's a frozen margarita. So I made the regular frozen margarita recipe, and then I added the simple syrup.
Wow. So you're not even making, I mean, you know, I make a margarita. It's a margarita mix. I'm very lazy in that regard.
I mean that's probably better. There are times where I'm like, I've been standing in my kitchen for hours. Why? Like, my back will start to hurt, and I'm like, I feel like I'm my own personal chef. It's like, oh my God, I keep working so hard. I'm like, you can stop at any point. This is just for you. Like, you cannot make your food so bougie. But, you know, I figured it's if you're to be alone during quarantine, like, you gotta do the best you can. You gotta make the best of it.
Right. I think that's good. I think that makes sense. I think, yeah. Now you say the person you're becoming, was this not how you were in the before time?
I was always very, like, I've been cooking for most of my life. My family is, like, originally from the South. And so you just learn how to do a little bit of everything. So I've been cooking for, yeah, like 30 some years now. I'm 39 next month. And so, okay. I've always been very particular about food. I mean, we ate a lot of quiche growing up, which is pretty strange because I am Black, and that's not really a go-to meal for most Black people, quiche Lorraine.
Not that
so
I
always,
yeah,
like,
okay,
my mom
fair.
Always, yeah, yeah. But so we always, like, ate, you know, like, balanced meals, lots of fruits and vegetables. And then I've just been always very particular about how I source my ingredients. And then, yeah, I'll cook. But that's the thing. I was like, all right, I usually will cook, like, most of my meals for myself. And then at the back of shows, I'm, like, eating some strange, like, Brussels sprouts and bratwurst before I go on stage or after. But this, I was like, oh, well, I have all this time to cook, so let's really get in deep to some, like, extra bougie stuff. But now I have time to make all these other things. Lots of components.
Right. That makes sense. I think that makes
yeah.
sense. That
also,
once you have the time, that you expand your palate to fill the time. I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, exactly. Plus, I watch a lot of Bon Appetit videos. That's when I realized, I'm like, this is part of the problem. Because I'm like, why can't I just make a tuna fish sandwich? And then I'm like, well, you watch all these Bon Appetit videos. Are you familiar with Bon Appetit, Brett?
I am not.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, that's normal. Bon Appetit is a food magazine, and then they have
oh the food magazine
online
yes
videos.
Okay right,
yeah
okay.
yeah yeah but so then they have like online videos with like different which actually has been a huge scandal but whatever that's other news but so their videos are like you know we'll go through different food techniques and cooking techniques and that's and then it, I think about month two I was like this is why all your food's so complicated you keep watching all of these recipes with like 13 steps. You're just internalizing that and making your food more complicated. But it's a great way to fill the time.
I think it is. That makes a lot of sense. So that was going to be my next question is what are you watching on TV? So it sounds like so you're watching the Bon Appetit videos. Have you been binging anything?
Yes. That's the thing. I eat good food and trash TV. That's the killer combo right there. So I will say this. I started on Tiger King literally the day it dropped. And was
oh,
hooked,
wow.
and before it became the wave. And I remember telling everyone, like, I think halfway through episode two, I was like, everybody needs to watch Tiger King. And then I think it got maybe like 15 likes on Facebook. And then within the next week, it just blew up and it was everywhere. So I loved Tiger King. I've watched Love Island, which is awful.
What is Love Island?
What
is that? What is that?
Okay, it's a British... I watched the British version. There's also an Australian version, I think an American one. But Love Island is basically a bunch of hot people, and then they'll throw in one person who's attractive and kind of intelligent, which I don't know how they survive. And then they're in a villa in Spain, and it's a dating show. So everyone couples up, and then, you know, the couple, they'll vote, and then they'll break up, and then they'll recouple, and blah, people get voted off, and blah, 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 blah. I do like British reality because I used to live in Ireland part-time like 10 years ago. So
oh, wow.
Their reality shows are a little more organic, I'd say, a little less produced, or at least it appears to be. But yeah, it's a great way to just forget that the world's ending. It's pretty mindless.
looking it up right now. This is definitely not for the unattractive. This is a good-looking group.
Not the people
you want to hire to do your taxes. But what, I'm sorry?
No. I said, yeah, it's a lot of hot people.
Yeah, very hot people.
But they're
very,
so
very
dumb. They're so dumb. One of the women was asking about Brexit. She didn't know Brexit was happening. It's like, are you insane? It's happening.
Wow.
Yeah, this might be the last time you go to Spain like this, girl. Like, what are you doing?
Don't you ever wonder what that must be like to have no interest in what's happening in the world?
Yeah. I mean, they're probably a lot happier than the rest of us. That's the one thing. I'm like, they're having a great time.
Yeah, no, I guess
that's
true.
Bliss.
That's true. There is true.
I mean, it's awful, but it's like, man, they're, you know, all they know is how to be hot and get paid for it, and they'll probably make more money than I will ever make in comedy. So, it's fine. And then Married at First Sight is the new wave for me.
What is that?
It's completely insane. Married at First Sight are people who literally get married and they've never met. They meet at their janky wedding. And then they keep – it's an experiment, which I don't ever want my marriage to be referred to as an experiment. But they have like 6 to 8 weeks to figure out if they want to stay married. And they know nothing about each other. Pretty crazy.
So disturbing. I mean, they did, was it Married by America? There was one that there was a big controversy about in the early days of reality TV. I think it was Married by America, where America, like, decided that you got married. People were very upset. The institution of marriage, blah, 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 blah. But I guess we don't care anymore, because this sounds, if I were an institution of marriage guy, I'd be pretty upset.
That's true, actually. That's a very good point. I guess, yeah, everyone's just like, ah, whatever, it's fine. We all
yeah,
whatever.
Whatever, it's another reality show. Who cares?
Entertainment. They have a panel of experts, I'll put that in quotes, like three people who match these couples together. And sometimes the reasons are very, very flimsy. Like, oh, well, he runs a gym and she's a dietitian. It's like, what? They're going to get along. Okay, and it's really bad. Like, you're like, oh my gosh, these people, they're living with a stranger. It's awful.
I just don't know how they allow the reality show producers to match them up?
Yeah, basically. Or they're experts, put that in quote. One of the women is a sociologist. What does that have to do with any type of relationship experience?
Nothing.
I don't know.
That means
one's
nothing.
A pastor. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And then, you know, you'll see them like – it's also funny. You can see how they're being pressured to stay in these awkward marriages. They're like, well, remember, this is a legally binding agreement. Are you ready to just give up on your marriage? And it's like, wow. A little heavy-handed.
Yeah, sounds like
and
it.
And then they'll be like, no – okay, I see what you're saying. I'll keep giving it a shot. It's really bad. This one couple, they're 3 weeks in, they still haven't had any sex.
Oh, wow.
Just, they have zero chemistry.
Well, but you don't know each other. You don't. That's the thing. I mean,
yeah,
you don't even know this person.
True, but they have, like, zero chemistry. It's really awkward. I mean, it's great television, but that's the gym owner and the dietitian. They have no chemistry. And I understand, like, the other couples have already consummated the marriage and they're just barely kissing each other. So it's just like, oh, I don't think this is going to work. And now they're both getting tense, of course, and they're stuck together. Awful. But once again, it's better than the news.
Ah, there we go. It's better. See, for me, and I talked about this way too much on this show, is my go-to are the superhero shows. And the superhero shows have very little to do with the news, except for Black Lightning. Black Lightning actually, it's not so much the current with the news, but like a year and a half ago, they were doing Black Lives Matter stuff. So that was interesting.
Ah,
I've been
catching up
on that. So that actually kind of pulled me back into reality. But in general, those are pretty far removed from anything resembling reality. But I guess reality
smart.
TV is also – I like reality TV is not reality. I think that's a good way to look at it.
Are you into any reality shows?
I'm really not. I never got into it with the from the very first wave. The only show I was ever into, and it was brief, I sort of caught it on like a marathon. It was a show called Workout, and it was about a woman who owned a gym. And it was dumb hot people, but it was like dumb hot personal trainers. And for some reason, that really appealed to me. Like, everything was really important, and, you know, everybody, they had really strong opinions about things. And it's like, you're all idiots. You're all morons. This is fascinating. Every time I watch it, I do kind of get into it. Like, I was on a plane, and I watched some 90 Day Fiancé.
Yeah.
And I was like, I could see getting into this. I don't know. Or I watched X on the Beach. X on the Beach. It's like meta reality because it's reality stars. It's a reality show made up of reality TV stars. So these aren't real people. Like these are just very very fake people. They're like bred in a lab or something. You know, like one was on 100%. Teen Mom, and one was on this, and one was on this, and it's all very. I almost feel like I don't speak the language of reality TV. I feel like there's a whole other set of stuff that you can talk about there. And it just, the 90 Day Fiancé was kind of fascinating because it really, the same reason this, you know, marriage show sounds sort of fascinating is like, what are you doing? Like, why would you put yourself through this? This is not just the camera following you around. This is your life. This is a big, big thing with your life. You really want to deal with that? And I don't know.
Yeah. It's bonkers. Like, 90 Day Fiancé is probably hands down one of the best reality shows ever because it actually is like it combines so many different reality shows. Like you have it's a travel show, then you also have like they're getting married, so then you have the whole say yes to the dress aspect of like what dress is she going to pick out. So that takes a couple episodes or an episode or so. Then you also have the when they get here, like it's like. Ooh, Stranger in a Strange Land, the foreign component. And then, of course, when they get married. So in some ways, I'm like, whoever came up with this is a fucking genius. I don't know if I can swear. I'm sorry.
That's right.
I know it's 11 a.m. Okay, cool. But it's like they figured out how to put so many shows wrapped up into one. It's pretty great. It's pretty cringy a lot, but it is pretty amazing. And I actually – I have someone who I married – I was married years ago, long time ago, and I married a foreigner. So it also appeals to me in that sense where I'm like,
oh, wow.
It's going to be – yeah, it's going to be – they don't know what – you know, America looks so shiny and new from far away. And then once you get here, you're like, oh, okay. It's a lot of really hard work and people in Walmart. Like, it doesn't look like television. So it is interesting to watch people acclimate to America. And then also the Americans tend to have, like, these awful expectations as if they're not bringing a person over, you know? Like, they'll be like, I don't understand why so-and-so's depressed. And it's like, well, they're not at home. Their family's gone.
Right.
They're completely removed from everything they ever knew, and it's not an easy thing to just be, oh, yeah, it's not like a vacation, you know, like, and a lot of times, you know, the Americans don't understand that. It can be pretty awful, but also, once again, it can be highly entertaining. The 90 Day Fiancé is, like, I think the king of all the reality shows, and there's so many spinoffs now, too.
Oh, is that right? I was unaware of that.
Oh, yeah. So 90 Day Fiancé was the original one. Then there's Before the 90 Days. And that's when people are just trying to decide if they're even going to do the 90 Day process. Then there's Happily Ever After, which follows together, that or while they're breaking up. Then there's one other one. And then now they have a quarantine one, too.
Quarantine show?
Yes. For the couples that are quarantined together. And then there's 90 Day Fiancé the other way. And those are people who their visas weren't approved or they don't want to go through the visa process. So they're moving to their partner's country. Americans moving abroad for their partner.
Wow. Now, which do you like better? Do you like seeing it work out or do you like seeing it fall apart?
I mean, oh no. I even though I am the way that I am a romantic. I want people to find love. But and then when it does work, it is very like endearing. One of my favorite couple, they just had a baby. And they you could tell from the beginning though that they really loved each other, and I'm glad that they worked out. So when it works out, it is like, aw, because it's a hard process. Like, bringing, I don't think Americans fully understand just how difficult it actually is to legally bring someone to America. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of stress. And a lot of times, depending on how long it can take, it can break down the relationship, just the visa process alone.
Right.
So, you know, you hope that – I always hope that it's going to work out. But some of the couples you can tell from the get, you're like, this is not – you guys are not a good match. Either their the expectations of the Americans are not very respectful or human, or, you know, or the person you can tell, like, okay, this might be like a scam – and they're just trying to get to America. But then there are couples that really, really do work, which is great. I want people to work out as a couple. That's
right.
Wonderful. But then if they don't belong together, it's like, oh, thank God they broke up. Like, they were terrible. So
it's funny.
Yeah.
This is the second show in a row, I think, where we talk about reality TV. The last one, this is comedian Elizabeth Lopez, who also works in reality TV. So we talked a little bit about that. Her dream job is 90 Day Fiancé. That's her favorite show. She thinks that one is absolutely the best. So that's pretty funny.
It's the cream of the crop.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it is. So so let's talk about you as a comedian. How did you get started in comedy?
Okay, so the first time I actually performed stand-up was at my friend's 30th birthday roast. And so this is one of my friends from high school. We dated in college, and then we stayed friends. And his now wife coordinated a surprise roast for him. Now, in high school and college, he did parliamentary debate. So I was like, so all of his friends are debaters. And I was like, I have to bring it. Like, I was like, I have to bring it. These guys, you know, they used to speak all the time. My friend Mikey, he's white. All his friends are white. I was like, I'm the only woman who's doing this besides his sister. I'm coming in from New York. This was down in Baltimore. And I'm the only black person here. So, like, I just have to bring it. And I got to say, I killed. Like, I just, you know, whatever. I make fun of Mikey all the time because he's a ridiculous person. So then afterwards, a bunch of people were like, oh, yeah, so you're a comedian. And I was like, no, I'm just Mikey's friend. They're like, no, like, you do comedy. You like they brought you in as a comedian. And I was like, no. What are you talking about? I'm a real estate agent. And so then that kind of put it in my head, like, okay. Which actually, I always liked stand-up, and I always liked comedy and thought it was funny. And then fast forward 2 years later was when I'd say a year later, I started properly writing jokes. I had always written kind of observations or things that made me laugh in my phone just to keep myself entertained. But then I was really like starting to work on jokes. And then in 2013, I started doing proper sets. That's when I was like, okay. So I wrote for quite a bit of time before I actually started performing. And, and then I took a class, which did not actually really help with anything, but it was a good way to get used to getting up and, you know, talking in front of people. And then I started doing mics, and then the rest is history. So that was,
there you go.
7 years ago. Yeah.
I feel like a class, you know, I don't know about your experience. Mine was pretty good, but it really did. It just kind of, it got me used to the idea of getting up and doing a 5-minute set. That, you know, I had tried it without that, and it was a lot rockier. Like, it was fine in that, you know, nobody died, nobody caught on fire. It was not the end of the world. But it was – that's something a comedian friend of mine, Eric Marino, says, you know, always remember you are not on fire. And I think that is a very, very important thing to remember, especially when the show is not going well. And it's like, well, I'm not on fire. I guess that's good.
Word.
But, you know
– sometimes you wish you were. You'd be like, God, if they were someone have a heart attack or something. I want to get up.
Right, exactly. Can we just end this, please? The set is just killing me right now. But I think that What was I going to say? Basically, it helps to have that little push to give yourself a little bit of a start. Because, like, I was the same way. I had been writing jokes my whole life. Like, I'd just written stuff down and never really thought of anything. You never really thought of it like, you know, oh, I'm going to get up and do these and perform them. I just sort of scribbled stuff down in notebooks. And then when it came time to make a set, I found I had some jokes, you know. And then, it took about another 6 months before I started really writing about like who I am and what I'm, you know, where I'm coming from, as opposed to just kind of jokey jokes. Jokey jokes are fine. I have no problem with jokey jokes, but it wasn't what I wanted to do. I wanted to expand what I was talking about a little bit. So I tend to advise people if they want to get started in stand up, like, why, you know, if you can afford it, take a class, just, you know, see how it goes. Because if you're really disciplined and you can just write and sit down and really dig in, then I think that's great. But not everybody's like that. Some people need that little extra push.
That's true. That's very true. I do feel like where I took class, I wish it was a little more hands on. And so when I hear sometimes like other people speak of their class experience, I'm like, oh, you actually got like proper feedback, or you were guided, or you had like assignments. And I just feel like the class that I took was, it's still, I don't regret it, but I still also am kind of like, oh, like there were things that were taught during your class. Where my class was more like, okay, yeah, tell your jokes, and then you get a little bit of feedback, and then they move on to the next person. But, you know, it's all part of the process. It was also good to think, just to have a group of people, or a handful, I should say, of people to go to mics with. I think that was really, really helpful.
I didn't really start doing this until I found a mic that I really liked. Once I found that, then I really dug in, and I went every week, and not just once. Like, I went multiple times a week, and, you know, now it's like I try to get out of my comfort zone a little bit. Because I think that's good too, but it's definitely helpful to have a place that you like, you know, and a group that you, and having people to go with is huge.
Yeah. It's, I think it makes a huge difference, as you said, because it's just, it's a weird environment. Like, open mics, it's just a very specific feel. And I remember the first time I went to a mic by myself, it was at Stand Up New York on the Upper West Side. And I remember I got there, and afterwards I told my friend, I'm like, these were the weirdest dudes I've ever been around. And I've always been this person who's had a lot of guy friends. Plus, I work in real estate, so I'm used to being around a lot of different types of people. So that's why I was like, where did these dudes come from? Because they're so weird in a specific way. But I've never interacted with people like them before. I mean, I do think Stand Up New York tends to attract a very specific crowd type of comedian. I just feel like I've seen a lot of weird stuff go down in Stand Up New York mics where I'm just like, who is this person? And then I won't see that person in any other mic. But, you know, the vibe is it can be so sad and down and self-loathing. You're just kind of like, oh, is this comedy? I mean, it depends on the mic as well, but I just remember like the first mic I went to being like, the first mic I went to alone, rather, just being like, what's with these guys? And now I'm like, oh yeah, these weirdos are the only people I'm friends with. I don't have that many non-comedy friends at this point.
No, at this point, all my friends are comedians. It's almost like I sometimes forget. Like, I was talking to a non-comedian friend, and I used the phrase "run the light," and I just kept talking, and then finally he said, "Brett, what does that mean?" I was like, "Oh, right, okay." So I just forget. Like, there's vocabulary, you know. There's stuff that you're running the light. I'm trying to think of other just comedian things, but there's stuff. There's just a vocabulary and words and phrases
that you use, and if
you're not a comedian, you have no idea what you're talking about. It just doesn't make any sense.
And then
at all.
Also, regular people can be boring. Sometimes I'm like, even my friend Mikey, like I've known him, you know, for most of my life, and sometimes I'm like, too much setup. Get to the punchline. What's the end of the story? I'm like, come on.
Oh, my God. It drives me crazy. Someone's
yeah,
going on and on and on, and you just,
I'm like,
oh, yeah,
Mikey,
yeah, totally.
Let's go. Get to the point.
Got to edit that.
You're killing me. You're like an old man on a park bench. Just fucking wrap it up.
Can't you say that in like 10 words?
Where's the story going? Yeah.
Exactly.
Way too much setup. Also, I feel like, oh, my God, yeah. Like, come on. Punch up the story. I will say, though, like, I feel like going through quarantine, sometimes I'm like, I need more non-comedy friends because comics are still comics, which I think has been the most interesting thing while we can't, like, perform comedy live. First thing was, like, I've done a lot of Zoom shows and IG live shows, and you know what? That's all we got. I mean, now shows are starting to pop up outdoors, but, you know, just, like, comics are constantly complaining. It's like I see all these complaints, and I'm like, guys, this is it. Like, we don't have anything else. This is the only way to do comedy right now. I mean, it's fine if you don't want to do it, but at the same time, you're complaining as if there's an alternative. Like, this is all we got. And for me, my first of all, being alone, I was like, so first time somebody was like, hey, do you want to do an online show? I was like, yes. I just want to see another person. Like, no problem. What time? I'll be there. I was so happy just to talk to someone else, like, you know, screen to screen, face to face. But then also in doing the shows, it's been able to – my biggest fear was, like, I don't want to forget my jokes. I don't want to forget my jokes. I want to stay crisp. I want to stay fresh. And so when I had – last week I had two live shows. And I don't mean to, I mean, I'm not bragging, but like I was one of the only comics who was like coming in hot. And I'm like, yeah, everyone talks about how stupid these Zoom shows are, but like, of course you'll forget your material. You haven't been performing. And I came in, I was like, I did two Zoom shows earlier. I'm ready to go. I know my set. I know exactly, you know, like I know exactly what I'm going to say. I know my new jokes I've been working on. And so there is definitely a function to them. But I was like, oh my God, comics are always complaining about something, also giving terrible advice. Brett, have you noticed, I don't know if this is, maybe your group of friends are smarter than the comics that I'm friends with, but I feel like in the beginning of quarantine, I went from, oh my gosh, my friends, they say such stupid stuff on stage, it's so funny, to like, oh, my friends, they're so stupid, why are they giving out medical advice? I'm like, you're, stay in your lane. We hang out in basements, in the back of bars. We don't give out medical advice. You don't know what you're talking about. The doctors don't know. And this is a pandemic. So why? I mean, people were writing paragraphs and paragraphs about coronavirus. And I'm like, what? A week ago, you were trying to, you know, master a dick pit bit. Now all of a sudden you're doling out, you know, medical. Like, oh, this isn't real. It's like, what? I mean, I'm not saying you're not right, but I'm saying I'm not going to go to you, a comedian, for anything that pertains to my health. So that was also did that happen to you? Did you see a lot of opinionated comedians talking about what to do and not to do?
Some. I mean, in terms of like what to do to get to avoid getting coronavirus, that kind of thing. Or, I mean, I've seen some, but. I haven't seen a ton of health advice, so maybe it's just my friend group because mostly we've been talking like I'm in this terrific group chat and all we do is talk about like tweets and you know jokes and stuff like that. I mean there's not a whole you know a little bit of politics but nothing major. It's really pretty much limited to jokes. I think we pretty much we're staying in our lane. We're definitely staying in. Now
yeah,
did you say you did a live show
like
you had an actual
show?
Did you say you had an actual show in front of an audience? Wow, where was that?
Yeah, I had two. One, they're both in Queens, both in Astoria. One was in front of the Bel Air Diner, and they stayed in their cars. But once again, that's where I thought, I'm like, this is why it's good that I've been doing shows online, because when you do Zoom, usually you can see and hear the audience. So that's like, you know, I mean, that's the closest you can get. But then there's some Zoom shows and then IG live shows. You're just telling jokes and looking for hearts and looking for likes. You know what I mean? But so doing the car show, I was like, that prepped me for this because they couldn't jingle their keys. And you could hear some laughter, but they mainly just flashed their lights when they liked the joke. But I was already ready to basically just talking to no one and then hoping for minimal response. So it wasn't that weird to me. I was like, okay, these lights flashing are like hearts on IG Live. So that was dope. And then the following, so that was last Thursday. I think it's every Thursday now that show's taking place. And then the following Friday, I had a show in Astoria Park. And that was really dope because, you know, it was just literally out in the open. There were no cars. There were no screens or glass for once, and it was just, you know, people. And so that was, both of them were dope. Yeah, it felt good, but then it was also weird, or it was great to see comics. But then in some ways, I then started to process everything that we have been through as a global society. And when someone's like, "So how have you been?" and you're like, oh, so much has happened. Where do I start? What
exactly.
do I share?
Exactly.
It's like, oh, wow, yeah. A lot's been going on. What's been going on with you? A lot as well. Okay. But, yeah, it was dope. It was very exciting. But then also sad, like, because it's like, I want to keep doing this. I don't know when I can do it in person again. But you take what you can get.
Right. No, that's great. I've heard it's Eitan Levine's show, right? The drive-in.
Yeah.
No, I know Eitan. He's been posting a lot about it. That's a really cool idea. I mean, I have to admit the idea that, you know, your laughter is the flashing lights. That's pretty weird. But I guess it's no weirder than doing IG Live, where your laughter is nothing. So.
Exactly. That's why I was like, oh man. Okay. Good. I'm glad that I've been doing these things. But that's also what's strange, where, like, comics have been like, oh, I see you're doing a lot of Zoom shows. And it's like, come on, man. Like, that's not a flex. I'm not the kind of person to flex anyway. But it's like, I mean, who cares? I'm not going to see someone doing a lot of Zoom shows and then be like, oh, so, see, you're getting up a lot. It's like, what? We're all trying to get through a pandemic. That's all that I think about, like, however you need to get through it, get through it. Although some people have been churning out way too much content, and I'm like, you're like a psychopath. Take a day to feel what the hell's going on in the world. Like, take a day off. But,
right.
You know, it's just like, it's strange to me. It's like comics are still thinking in that competitive sense, even though these are literally just online shows. Like, no one's getting any, like, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't mean anything.
Well, this is what we have. I mean, there's a lot of comics that won't do them. And, you know,
yes.
I don't really get that. Like, I mean, I'm not, and I don't think anyone's being standoffish about it. I think they're just like, it's not for me. I'm like, okay, then I guess you're not going to do anything. I mean, if I didn't have comedy during this, I don't know what I would have done. I mean, I guess maybe I would have written a novel or something. But the truth is, this is what, you know, this is what's kept me from losing it. This is what kept me sane. Is doing
100%.
Doing the Zoom shows, doing the Zoom open mics, and also it motivates me to write. Like if I'm going to do a Zoom with the same people, I don't want to come in with the exact same material. So I want to come in with something new, and therefore that means I got to write every day. You know, so yesterday I sat down, I wrote for a half hour. I'm not saying I came up with anything amazing, but, you know, like I had a nice tidy quarantine set. I got to get rid of a lot of it because like I had some Cuomo jokes. He stops the briefing. Suddenly that's not really relevant anymore. You know, things like that. But, you know, yeah, you always have to make adjustments when something's topical. So, I mean, that's been
100%.
Fun. It's been good. It's definitely been good.
Well, that's exactly. It's like, come on, guys. I feel like also it just connects me to who I am. You know, I feel like for a lot of comics, we feel like, well, not everybody, but for a lot of us, it's like this is who we are as people. And then to not be able to do that, you know, a lot of people felt lost. You know, I would just cook and clean and stuff, but sometimes I'm like, I would have a flashback to like a show, and I'm like, that's right. Do this thing that was so much fun, and I have so much, you know, like to offer the world, and I have all these great jokes. And then, you know, I would just go back to like roasting a chicken or something. You know what I mean? Like, but I'm like, but you know, but then I also like having a show at night. I'm like, okay, this helps give me structure. This helps give me, yeah, things to work, like new stuff to write. And it helps connect me to the thing that I miss and love and feel like is who I am as a person, not just like, it's not just a pastime, you know, for a lot of comedians. It's how we process the world. And Lord knows, with all everything that's happened, it's like there's so much to say and so much to talk about. But, I mean, I understand people who don't want to do it. Like, I understand people who don't want to do anything, frankly, because it's a lot. A lot has happened. That's a short amount of time. But I think to critique it is a little silly. You know, like,
I just don't think it makes sense to, you know, to not do it. I think this, again, this is what we have. If you don't want to do it, that means you don't want to do comedy. And if you want to do comedy, this is comedy right now. So, you know, I'm seeing something. And again, if you're a high level pro and you can do a Patreon and have people subscribe to your podcast and whatever and do private videos and, you know, you're going to get some of these, you know, out of town gigs as, you know, clubs open up and other places, you know, it's like, okay, that's great. You know, if you need the reps, like, let's just get the reps. Let's just do it, man.
Yeah.
Why not?
100%.
What's the downside?
100%. Exactly. Like, and then also, I mean, I will say this. One thing I was impressed about was how quickly comics adapted. That to me was like so impressive. How quickly comedians were like, all right, we're in quarantine. Let's get it going. Like, yes. You know, like, okay. This is amazing. And even now that things are opening up, how quickly, or just like now that the weather is nicer, I should say, how quickly comedians are adapting and shifting again to like, how can we use open spaces to have shows? I mean, that to me is like, it's very inspiring. And it's just one of those things where you're like, ah, yeah, because we need this. Like, we need comedy. As much as people need comedy, we need it as well. And
absolutely.
You know, figuring out how to do it online or how to do it in person, it's just like, oh, thank God. I mean, I don't have it. I at one point I was like, well, maybe I'll have it. And I was like, I don't like promoting. So I was like, there's no way you're going to be able to do, produce a show and keep up with it. My attention can, like, if I have a show that's booked, I'll do it, obviously. But like, I was like, you're not going to promote, you're not going to have the stamina. So I'm really impressed. I don't know. Do you know Couch's comedy?
You know, it keeps popping up in my feed. I have not. I'm not that familiar.
Yeah, he's over, I think, maybe like 100 days in or something.
Oh, wow.
And he has it every night for 3 hours. Every time I do a show, I'm like, you know, Nick, you're out here doing the Lord's work. Like, you're the only audience and you're listening for 3 hours every night. Two comedians and like giving us an outlet. It's pretty impressive. And he started,
yeah, awesome.
I think like week one, maybe week one, week two. So it's very impressive. And then also I have a weekly show, two weekly shows, with another comedian, Megan O'Malley, The Pit. I don't know if you know, like, socially distant improv. So they just created their own channel of improv. Not 24/7, but for a good chunk of the day. And then they have two stand-up shows on Fridays and Saturdays. And then Megan and I are the warm-up for those shows. And so I think we were supposed to do 15 minutes each. And then by week three, I was like, because I do a lot of crowd work as well. So, by week three, I was like, wait, Megan, don't go. I was like, wait. And then I just started talking to her when I was running my jokes. And then now all we do is basically just like chit chat, and like tell funny stories. It's been really good, because one thing, it anchors my week where I know, like, okay, every Friday and Saturday you have something you have to do. Try to work on new bits so you can try to like talk about them if you can, like, during the conversation. But then also it's like, okay, every Friday and Saturday I know I'm going to have a conversation with an outside person, with my friend Megan.
Christiana, I hate to stop you, but we're going to run out of time. Can you tell everyone where to find you on the social medias?
Oh, sure. So on Twitter, which I barely use, but then also on Instagram, it's Incomparable. And then on Facebook, I'm Christiana Jackson.
Okay. All right, great. And you got those two shows that you mentioned. So thank you very much for being on. I really appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow.